Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Regarding ID podcast. I'm Gina Jordan. A single digital identity credential could create a highly secure identity for use in all digital interactions. Even better, users could dump that long list of passwords for various accounts. Now, first-of-its-kind legislation awaiting the governor's signature in Virginia would create uniform standards for strengthening and authenticating digital identities. The proposal has been studied for about 4 years by the Virginia Legislature's Joint Commission on Technology and Science, known as JCOTS. The main sticking point has been how to handle liability for identity providers. We're joined by two people who've been the driving force behind getting the bill passed. Jeff Negrini is president and founder of Certipath, a trust framework provider. He works exclusively on digital identity. And Timothy Reiniger is director of the Digital Services Group at Future Law, a law and government relations firm. Jeff, let's start with you. Data breaches are becoming a weekly headline. How is identity an important part of solving this problem?
If we look at virtually every data breach and system hack that we've seen in the news over the past few years, weak identity mechanisms online are to blame. If we can fortify identity online with the same investment that the industry has put, you know, so much into the network security solution side, then we will have taken away the primary mechanism that literally most every sophisticated hacker we've seen use to date. And if you consider the physical security world, we have had centuries to work out robust ways to prove our identities across literally a number of everyday situations. So cyberspace, by comparison, is very new, and worse, the internet on which it is largely based, it was created without regard to identity. So if anything, the internet was originally intended to allow users to remain anonymous. It's my belief that I think until we fix online identity, data breaches and system hacks are going to be commonplace.
Tim, tell us, what does the bill do and how would it enable digital identity adoption?
The bill has two parts, and both extremely significant. First of all, both the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace and the American Bar Association committees of experts looking at these issues have identified as a major barrier to the creation of a third-party identity credentialing market, unpredictability of liability for identity providers, and the lack of a common legal framework. So this bill does precisely that. It addresses the creation of a common legal framework by providing a series of definitions for the first time to be enacted in statute, definitions that have been used certainly in the contract world by trust frameworks, identity providers, definitions that have been discussed by the American Bar Association committees and in the national strategy. But this is the first time they would create a standardized set of definitions in statute for all parties to be using. And second, the bill addresses the unpredictability of liability for identity providers by making it clear in law for the first time and providing significant limitations to that liability in order to incentivize private sector players to come into this space and be identity providers and trust framework operators. And then finally, the bill, for the first time, creates within a state an actual standards body that is public-private. It is overseen ultimately by the state, in this case, Commonwealth of Virginia, in the form of the Secretary of Technology. And the policy here is that because technology is shifting so quickly, there are so many different types of communities of interest that there cannot be a one-size-fits-all approach, and that there cannot be one set of standards that is fixed for all time. So this entity, this advisory council created by the state, will be creating a minimum set of guidelines to be followed by trust framework operators. And this would change over time. And also, because the online world, as we all know, is global, it's international, it's not just within the boundaries of Virginia, this advisory council would be looking to integrate and update its standards with the larger international community.
Does this legislation actually provide immunity to identity service providers?
This is Jeff again. You know, I have heard that tossed around quite a bit. It probably helps that one of the clauses in the bill actually speaks to immunity. First of all, the answer is no, but it's a qualified no. The first thing to understand here is that unless you've been to law school, almost all the legal situations that people are going to be familiar with in their normal business or consumer life are bilateral contracts. That's where there are just two parties to a contract, be them individuals or companies, you have two parties. But the proposed identity bill, it seeks to resolve this problem, this ambiguity introduced through third-party reliance on identity credentials.
This is Tim. What this bill does is set up basically four approaches to liability of the identity provider. And in the current legal system, relying parties that do not have a contract with the identity providers have very uncertain ability to recover damages at all. State to state, it's unpredictable. But the common law as it exists does not accommodate this type of third-party identity system. What this bill does is say that if an identity provider or trust framework operator issues a credential in a manner that's not in compliance with the state minimum standard or a separate private contract or the terms, rules, policies of the identity framework in which the parties operate, there will be liability. Now, number two, if it is issued in compliance, it could only be liability if the identity provider is grossly negligent or, say, wantonly willful act of misconduct. And this was key from the beginning, as stressed by CertiPath, that this liability has to be bound. And, you know, and again, the national strategy for trusted identities in cyberspace expressly says that there has to be an answer to this liability problem that is facing identity providers. Number three, which is very powerful in this bill, is that the bill distinguishes issuance versus misuse. So it expressly says that an identity provider or an identity trust framework operator shall not be liable for misuse of an identity credential by the credential holder or any other person who misuses the identity credential. The legislators have been convinced, they've realized that it's unfair, makes no sense to hold an identity provider liable for others' misdeeds, misuses of these credentials, because the identity provider has no control over that whatsoever. Identity provider can only control the issuance process. Finally, this bill does formally recognize the trust mark for the first time in the history of this country and provides for a warranty that's conveyed by the trust mark, and in fact, an implied warranty. That's another form of liability, but the identity provider using a trust mark is warranting that it has issued the credential in compliance with the state standards and the rules, policies of its trust framework.
Jeff, why does the bill focus on identity trust frameworks and their trust marks?
Okay, well, consider the value and the reliability provided by credit card issuers like Visa or MasterCard. So merchants, they don't have a direct relationship with literally even knowledge of ever issuing bank that might represent a credit card that a patron will present at some point at their store. So rather, they trust the secure clearinghouse relationship that was established by, you know, the Visa or the MasterCard or the Amex or whomever it was, right? And those, in this case, trust framework providers handle certification and the continuous vetting of the credit card providers. So in identity, right, we see the potential for large numbers of identity providers at various levels of assurance in the online identity marketplace. We think that there's a very high likelihood of that. So unless a trust framework exists to help us aggregate all those providers, these websites and e-commerce portals and supplier portals, which I'm just generically calling relying parties, those relying parties will not be able to adequately understand at scale what rules any given identity provider was issuing under, and further, if that issuer is even still trustworthy. So the Commonwealth of Virginia, under the Secretary of Technology, is going to review and endorse trust frameworks that meet their requirements. And there's going to be an official Virginia government listing. Now, how does a identity credential prove that it's part of that community? So that's where trust marks come in. Trust framework operator can provide a digital token to their certified members that allows the identity provider to prove that they're a member in good standing and that they're following the rules of framework they fall under.
You've said this bill has been 4 years in the making. What was the catalyst behind drawing up this bill?
Jeff, you can only sit in so many meetings and talk to so many would-be identity providers. You know, people that are perfectly placed to do it, have all the commercial incentive in the world to do it, would be solving a very important problem by doing it, to take the steps to do the business case, to look at the operational impact of their business of becoming a provider, and then to have it fail in the last minute when a legal review determines that there is no means to fully mitigate one's risk in issuing a commercial identity that subsequently could be used anywhere. You know, often in other industries, we see that insurance is the means by which at least risk transference is used as a form of mitigation. But here, we don't even have that because there's no actuarial data on which an underwriter could make a underwriting decision and write an insurance policy. Again, as a trust framework provider, I have seen many prospective issuers decide not to proceed based on this issue alone when they would have otherwise. We also obviously see more and more hacks going on in data breaches, it seems like every week. And every one of them, you can draw back to some form of identity being misused. And it just was time when we said that enough really is enough. You know, we know how to fix this.
May I just add, this is Tim. When the bill started, it was viewed as another technology bill purely with legal elements. But there have been so many data breach problems, the identity theft has gotten worse. So the legislators now are using this as a consumer protection bill. They're realizing that consumers need better protection than a simple username and password. They need to have access in an affordable way to third-party credentials. They get now why this bill is needed as consumer protection and why we need to incentivize a private market of third-party credential providers and identity proofers.
Thanks to Jeff Negrini of Certipath and Timothy Reiniger of the law and governmental affairs firm Future Law, both based in Virginia. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Regarding ID podcast.